You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Wednesday, 4 June. We've got ADP employment data in the US out later today, due 2:15. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Kian Nyana, some Scope Prime, local asset managers, the likes of, I don't know, Signia, Coronation, 91, Quilter, I suppose. Is there value there? Higher markets should help revenues. And then local GDP, Q1, 0.1%, just not enough. Although the OECD did put us at 1.3% for the year. Harris Gore from Growthpoint Investment Managers, how private credit in the US is holding up. And then Thembi Nkosi-Phansi, he's from the National Automotive Dealers Association. Strong May vehicle sales, although we've got to also be reality, last May was an election. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. GDP shows it grows a dismal 0.1 in the first quarter. If agricultural didn't show strong growth of nearly 16%, that would have contracted by 0.3. Business Day, Reserve Bank dangles an 870 billion rand carrot in 3% inflation target push. The bank argues that lowering the inflation target would lower the cost of servicing government debt. Morning markets, the US was green, S&P up 0.6%, the Nasdaq up 0.8%. The East is green, we've got Sydney up 0.2%, Tokyo 1% higher, Hong Kong also 0.2% up, and Tencent 0.9%. Commodities, mostly green. Gold futures are slightly weaker, 3,388. Brent is 65.38. Platinum, 1,077. Palladium, 1,019. The Rand is 17.86. Bitcoin, 105,700. Top 40, looking for a green open, 500 points, or almost 0.6% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Kian Nyana. Kian, appreciate the early morning. As I said in the intro there, so we had the Signia numbers out recently. Assets under management up 18%, although some of that's under administration. We've also seen Quilter. We've seen 91, Coronation. My simple logic says with local markets at highs, US markets just off highs, other European at highs, that should just make more revenue for them as assets under management rise. Is there opportunity here? Is this a sector you're looking at and thinking might be worth actually taking some positions?
You know, Si, for the first time at an AGM, there was an equity analyst at the Coronation AGM that asked a very peculiar question. I think in the rise of activist investors, remuneration is really a sore point. Uh-huh. And the question they asked to the remuneration committee of Coronation is, can they not have more performance-based remuneration standards to hold the executive directors to? Because they believe that the performance of this, of Coronation is not really shooting the lights out, because they're just merely steering the ship because they're so large. And I think that's the conundrum you get with some of these counters. I mean, at the top end, such as the Coronations, the 91s, they're so large that they cannot become innovative. And hence why, even during market downturns, you see them getting bashed. Some of them are all trading at single PEs. And that's just because of the fact that essentially they just become index trackers.
I take your point there. Absolutely, just too large. 600 billion of OM. It's hard to move the needle on that. 100%. Let's quickly switch to GDP. 0.1% yesterday. It was slightly better than expected. I think consensus was looking for negative 0.1. Either way, we're just not growing, and that is. I mean, that's just bad for everything in South Africa.
I mean, for me, the most concerning part was listening to budget 2.0 to budget 3.0, where essentially there was there was a loss of almost 50 basis points in GDP growth in less than 2-3 months. And essentially, it speaks to reality of what's currently going on the ground. I mean, you're supposed to be seeing mining, manufacturing leading the charge in this, but it's agriculture was surprised on the upside. And I think, as you said, without the agricultural numbers, it wasn't going to be looking good. But I think the green shoots in that number was that consumption expenditure remained very robust, which means that the South African consumer is very resilient, even though it is quite tough.
Yep. Resilient. We're tired of being resilient, but we are resilient. A quick last question. Gold traded up 3,400 in the futures, come back a bit. What's your view on gold? I mean, is it something you hold? Are you trading it? Is it kind of had its run maybe?
I think there's still some headway because of the, there's still some tailwinds that are going to support the gold price. And that's just purely because of the fact that Trump is not a very trustworthy person. And I don't think the systematic risk has come out of the market. And I think gold and gold counters are the only ways to hedge against systematic risk and systemic risk within your portfolio. So right now, with the taco trade going on, I think gold remains very robust to keep on going higher, just purely because there's still a lot of uncertainty within the trade policies around the world.
Taco trade, Trump always chickens out. Kian and Yona, Scope Prime, appreciate the early morning time. Our poll today is around those asset managers. Are you buying asset managers? Well, as Kia says, perhaps just too large to innovate, too much Remco being paid. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Harris Gore, he of course from Grovepoint Investment Management. Harris is our private credit guru, US private credit. Harris, appreciate the time. It's been a crazy bit. We have chatted a whole bunch recently because, well, things are happening. Last time we spoke, you were talking around how the massive sell-off around Liberation Day creates opportunities. What are you seeing in private credit in the US? I mean, is there stress? Is it sort of back to normal? Certainly equity markets seem to think it is.
Morning, Simon. Yep. Thanks for having me on the show again. What are we seeing? I mean, there's no normal anymore, but what we're seeing in private credit was the Liberation Day sell-off certainly created opportunities. It was fairly short-lived. We deployed a lot into the dislocation. We had vehicles that were trading at 0.7, 7.8 of book value. So, I mean, to put that in context for listeners, that is buying a kind of well-diversified portfolio of loans to scaled companies. I mean, companies that are doing generally $99, $100 million of EBITDA a year. And you're buying these loans at 0.8 of their value. So you've got a 20% buffer there. Why we like that buffer is that it's not only significant protection against downside. So if you think about, say, credit losses through the GFC, your trough credit loss was about 12% of your loan value, GFC. So if you're buying a loan with a 20% discount, you've protected yourself against the GFC type scenario, which we don't think we're in, but you're more than protected against your GFC downside. But then if that downside doesn't materialize, you've also got that pull to par. So you've got on top of your 10% yield, you then get another 400, 500 basis points per annum of pull to par as the loans recover. So when we see that kind of dislocation in Liberation Day, that's the time that we need high conviction and we need to get into the market and you need to be buying those quality portfolios. And that was actually great to see because we've been waiting for that for a long time. Subsequently, we've obviously seen the recovery both in equities and in these listed credit vehicles. And we've actually just gone through the Q1 earnings calls. And underneath it all, what we're seeing in sectors like tech, industrial services in the US is that earnings are still growing, margins are still healthy, interest coverage ratios are improving, default rates are coming down. The consumer has probably been in a recession, but it's been a mild recession and it's probably the bottom end of the consumer. We're still seeing $7 trillion sitting in money market funds, which is, I think, the highest level for 30 years. So you've got this massive wall of liquidity and cash that kind of buffers and protects against any prolonged dislocation. And then on the corporate side, we're just not seeing the earnings recession that, frankly, we've been predicting for some time. come through in private companies. You're seeing the U.S. kind of private economy, the core U.S. market, remaining very, very robust.
Absolutely. And we've seen it. I was chatting with Nick Kunzer on Monday. We got JobStart out of the U.S. on Friday, and it's expected to be another good number. I mean, you talk around earnings recession. I mean, S&P 500 earnings up 6% in Q1. Your point is well taken. From an outsider, it looks like the world is ending, but actually on the ground in the U.S., it's kind of doing perfectly fine, notwithstanding the wild swings in markets.
Yeah, it's hard to know where we go to from here. I mean, the tariff regulations are unpredictable. Mm. And what we tend to favor, as we've spoken about before, is be disciplined on price, not overpay for assets, protect your downside via diversification, which we do through listed credit vehicles. So have over 3,000 loans in the portfolio and make sure you concentrate on companies that have a reason for existing. And the US market's a huge market. It's a market that can stand on its own 2 feet. Most of the private companies that we look at they're not global companies, so they're not subject to import, export. Mm. I think about 4% of their cost of goods sold is generated from imports. All their sales are in the US. So it's a very insular market when you look at that middle market in the US.
There's an important thing you said up front as well, which was when that opportunity came post-Liberation Day, you moved quick and you just said, now, discipline on price. And those are perhaps the two key traits, is know what you like, know the price you like it, and when it comes, grab it.
Exactly, Simon. I mean, a lot of people sit waiting for dislocation, then when it comes, they end up putting out fires because there are fires all over the portfolio. But I think the point is, and if you're going to be focused on this sector, the nice thing about the listed private credit vehicles is that you can deploy rapidly. If you're looking at private credit through lockup funds and the opportunity presents itself, you actually can't get deployed because you're waiting to be drawn down and you're waiting for assets to be originated. Whereas in the listed market in the US, you see someone like New Mountain or Golub trading at 15, 20% discount, and you've got to be a buyer at that level and you've got to act.
It is, and you make a great point there. It's around that liquidity as well, which in essence, and in the US markets, liquidity is in many cases incredibly deep. And that is a competitive advantage, not just for your AMC, but also just for the broader US markets.
100%. I mean, we love the market because of the liquidity. You don't find that anywhere else in the world, in private credit in particular. The fact that you can get, I think, about 40% of US private credit AUM is listed on the NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange. So you can buy Apollo, Blackstone, Carlyle, Ares, Golub, New Mountain. You can buy all their vehicles kind of listed on the stock exchange. And as you said, the liquidity is deep there. There's sometimes you don't like the price. Sometimes it trades down. We like that volatility, but there's always a price.
We'll leave it there. That's Harris Gore, Growth Point Investment Managers. Appreciate the time. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Thembiwe Nkosi-Pantsi, Vice Chairperson of the National Automotive Dealers Association. Thembiwe Nkosi, appreciate the early morning. May, new vehicle sales out earlier in the week. 45,308 vehicles sold. That's up 22% year on year. May last year was an election month. That might have depressed last year. But we're still seeing good growth. It's still 8 months of growth in the new vehicle sales.
Yeah, thank you so much, Simon. Good morning. Good morning to your listeners as well. No, absolutely. This was a very nice, satisfying feel, you know, to see consumer confidence boosted by, you know, by further interest rate cuts and also the positive development on the geopolitical front. Yes, you are right. 22% improvement in new vehicle sales in month of May as compared to last year. And we all know last year, you know, it was the, you know, political year and the political. And then, however, I mean, 22% improvement, that's quite massive. And I think the lot of factors that play there, as I've highlighted earlier on, just the confidence in terms of the geopolitical front. I mean, we saw President Ramaphosa meeting with the U.S. President Donald Trump, and just to finalize and iron out a few issues that are of interest, you know, to the economy, that are of interest to the consumer confidence. And also the finalization of the national budget, that also boosts the consumer confidence, and hence then we see the numbers that we saw. But what's interesting, Simon, is that, you know, the 45,308 vehicles sold in May, it doesn't reflect, you know, the true reflection of the total market. When you look at the Chinese brands, I mean, we've got 24 Chinese brands that are currently available in South Africa, but only 12 of those 24 Chinese brands have reported, they submitted their sales data. that number can be actually more than that. I mean, we spoke about this last month, me and you, in terms of the Chinese, Japanese brands that are coming in into the market with the alternative. So that number can really be in, I would say, plus minus 47,000 or so, with the other 12 that that could have reported their sales data.
Okay, and that's even more significant, and significant more growth. Hey, you mentioned rates there. Most new vehicles that have loans over them, which I imagine are most vehicles, those loans are linked to prime. So we've also seen a 1% decrease in the prime rate over the last year. That must be helping just good old-fashioned affordability.
Huge. It's huge. I mean, it's huge in the automotive sector. Any move in the interest rate, you know, it kind of like triggers some movement in the automotive sector. I mean, if, for instance, if you look at the announcement when it's made, I mean, a week or two before that, you know, things are very sluggish in the market, mm-hmm. in the automotive. But once we hear on the day, on that Thursday afternoon, once we hear the news on Friday, you start to see activity happening in our dealer. And that shows how much of a positive economic output is the automotive sector reliant on. As I've said, it is satisfying to see consumer confidence being boosted by a lot of things that are being positive that are happening. But we are not out of the woods yet.
Yeah.
So, there's still a lot of issues with the tariffs and all of that. But I think as the automotive sector, these small little growth that we've seen in the last 8 to 9 months, they're very, very much welcome. And also, as we all know, you know, our members, our NADA members, they're very resilient. And it shows that if you hold on at the right time, you will reap the rewards.
We chatted last time as well. We mentioned the light commercial vehicles, again, up 5.8%. That's smaller than total sales. But it does tell us a story. I mean, it's almost 11,000 units being sold. And this is going to be sold to predominantly, I imagine, sort of small and medium businesses, I suppose some big ones as well. But it does kind of tell us that there's also some confidence out there, maybe not massively, but some confidence out there in the broader business community as well.
Yeah, look, you're 100% spot on. I mean, the commercial vehicle sector performed exceptionally well in the month of May. And as you've highlighted, it potentially signaled a renewed sense of confidence in the broader economy. I mean, these are small, medium and large businesses mm-hmm. That are using these commercial vehicles. And to see that growth, it is very much welcome, and as I said, it kind of like signal a renewal sense of confidence in the economy. I think the economy, the last thing it wants is to have negative news. It's either local or global. Once the news are negative, and then you know you start to see the numbers shrinking quite drastically. But to see commercial, even heavy trucks, they haven't done bad. But to see commercial vehicles growing in this tough economy, it is very much welcome. I mean, the minister was forecasting a 0.1% growth in the economy, and then you get 5% or so growth in the commercial. That shows that, you know, we are hopeful, and it also shows that the businesses out there, they're not folding their hands. They are nudging forward, they are pushing forward and looking for alternatives to get their business going, which is great.
A last question, the pre-owned segment, you make a great point. Customers opted for pre-owned vehicles from perhaps more aspirational brands instead of new vehicles. And I imagine there you're taking the same amount of money, but you're saying, you know what, if I can get a nice German luxury sedan on the pre-owned market, and consumers are making that choice.
No, 100%. I mean, I've seen that with my own business, the Vary Cars, which is a premium pre-owned business. And then that's why I made the point to say, if the consumer cannot afford, you know, your new German machine, which is our, what you call the aspirational brands, and they opt for a pre-owned one, of course, with good mileage, and service histories and the likes. And this brings a new dynamic in the automotive sector to say there are still customers who want to drive these vehicles, but because of tough economic challenges, let's try and make this vehicle available, affordable, and also with a good service history, track record, and accident-free. There is a market. So there is a market to buy the pre-owned vehicle. And also what was interesting for me, you know, is to see a lot of consumers saying, look, I'm not sure about the Chinese and Japanese brand. Let me try a pre-owned one and see, you know, how their after-sales mobility and the likes. And then maybe in the future, I will commit into a new vehicle. And for me, that was really, really fascinating, Simon.
Yeah, okay. I hadn't thought of it. Yeah, it's sort of testing the waters in a sense. We'll leave it there. Timmy Nkosi-Pansi, Vice Chairperson, National Automotive Dealers Association. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. I was chatting with Petli Radenhuis yesterday here in at Capital Advisors. We were asking him where next for the market. He's been fairly spot on so far this year. And we asked him, and he said, look, we're going up to new highs. We asked you what your take is. Over half said we're going higher, agreeing with Petli. Around a third said drifting nowhere. Rest said down from here and then down some more. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobukle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. New rules on reporting salaries across all staff.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.